Chapter 18. Demigod of Mars. Evacuation. Let me not die unremembered. She was wounded, hurting, weary. But she was also a demigod, and demigods did not lament. They endured, they triumphed, they protected those who looked to them in worship.
Home,
said a voice. She would never see home again. She would never leave this city alive. She knew these things. Fire burned in her bones. The souls inside her shouted and cried out and fought the flames.
Home,
said the voice again. The voice wasn't speaking to the demigod, nor to the crew inside the demigod's skull cockpit. The voice was speaking to those who would live to fight another day. She stood above the city, the equal of its wraithbone spires, and saw the war taking place between the faithful and the faithless at her feet. In true wars, there was always dust from marching feet and falling buildings, great clouds of it that occluded vision and forced her to rely on the blind echolocation of her auspex or the hunting sense of her heat maps. There was no dust here. The towers of alien bone fell in brittle shatterings. The lesser buildings gave way beneath her tread like flawed glass. No dust. No dust at all. The mist, though. The mist was worse than the dust. It came and went without pattern or warning. Even when thin, it sent back false echoes of prey with low-power passive echolocation pulses. When thick, it masked the heat signatures of other engines, friend and foe alike, in a veneer of cold emptiness. The golden mist was thick now. She couldn't see those that hunted her. She lit her void shields, her internal generators layering them the way a colony of spiders labours together to weave a web.
Home,
said the voice. Be silent, she told it. Ignatum marches. The scion of vigilant light strode through the mist, war horning to those beneath her tread. Martian hoplites scattered in tactical dispersion, as they had thousands of times before. They knew how to wage war in the demigod shadow. The Titan streamed with smoke as she marched. Victory banners swayed beneath her gun limbs, far above the heads of her loyal infantry. These pennants and standards of red and black marked the Scion as one of Legio Ignatum's ducal engines, eminent in name and deed. The extinct wasp of Ignatum showed in scratched and battered pride upon her carapace. When she had first joined this theatre of war, she had felt loose and unready. Her worshippers had reassembled her within this alien city and told her to guard them against ghosts and phantoms that scarcely registered on her senses. Active Auspex chimes were worthless. They reverberated throughout the Wraithbone buildings, mis-echoing and false-bouncing until the Scion's systems insisted the entire city was alive and moving. The frustration of her human crew had bled through to the Scion's spirit, infecting her with impatience. But she had learned, and so had they. She had learned to rely on low-grade Auspex pulses and to fight via naked vision. She had learned to destroy enemies that barely seemed there at all. And most recently of all, she learned the enemy had brought demigods of their own. They had wounded her in these last days, wounded her badly. The demigod was hurting now. She was destined to die today. But not yet. Not yet. Her brothers and sisters were less sanguine regarding her fate. The arguments had raged between crews until she had silenced them with her decision. To die here was an honour. She would not release her crew to flee with the others. She would stand until she could stand no longer, selling her life to buy time for those fated to fight another day.
Home,
said the voice. It was the newest voice among her pantheon of pilots and crew and worshipful servants. Home was the sanctum forges on sacred Mars, a world riven by civil war, where the foundry fires were now lifeless and cold. Home was the mountain fortress where traitorous souls had plundered the wealth and lore of Ignatum in the Legio's absence. Home. The very word set the demigod's heart reactor seething with overburning plasma. What was she to do? She couldn't run with the others. She was to die here, selling her life to save theirs. Such sacrifice shouldn't have to endure homesick keening in spurts of treacherous code.
Home.
How relentless the voice was. The Archimandrite, it called itself, insisting that it was invested with the authority of Mars. That repetitive authority had been rattling against the insides of the Scion's skull cockpit for several days now.
Home,
said the voice. Be silent! She refused to die with such puling weakness whining in her senses. Onward she strode, street by street, lending indifferent rage from her district-killing cannons, when a phalanx of tanks or a lone beast of considerable size presented itself as a ripe target. Presently she halted in her hunt. Minutes later, hours later, she did not know, and it did not matter. She judged the passing of time only by the pain she suffered and the destruction she inflicted. Her void shields rippled with the incidental fire of infantry shrieking around her feet. This she ignored. The pain of the fires inside her had dulled to the ache of abused metal. This she was grateful for. A low-grade Auspex ping rippled outwards, bleakly blind. Her heat maps showed cold. The Scion panned along her waist axis, staring into the golden mist. Her pilots worked the controls, not only watching but listening to the calls and cries of their kindred in the skull cockpits of the Scion's brothers and sisters. At her ankles, her hoplites engaged the phantasms, laying in with spears and shields and brief eruptions of Volkite anger. The Scion sounded her war horn once more and moved on. She followed the calls of her siblings. Onwards, onwards, onwards. She felt her brother die. His agony and fury vented across the communion link that existed outside any general Voxweb. By the time she reached him, he was gone. Ilmarius Novus lay dead in the street. The warhound's shattered form driven face forwards into the ground with a supreme lack of dignity. The thousand punctures of overwhelming bolt penetration, detonation, told the tale of how he had fallen. His core was still lit. That a critical detonative event hadn't occurred was something of a grim miracle. Not that it mattered to Ilmarius Novus one way or the other. His armor plating was a blackened ruin. His gun limbs were reduced to bent wreckage. The last and truest indignity had come after his killer had left. His head had been cracked open with power weapons and hand-held melters, in order for the enemy infantry to drag the soft and vulnerable crew away from their hard-plugged thrones. They hadn't gone far. Their bodies lay like spilled tears by the warhound's cheek, their own cranial wounds showing the manner of their execution. She knew this because her crew knew this. Hard plugged together, they were her, and she was them. Which of the foe had done this? Was the murderer still here? The answer was swift in coming. Engine. She yearned with her flawed senses, staring into the mist. The foe. The enemy saw her first. It was already fleeing as she rounded the corner, striding around a cluster of wraithbone spires, a warhound sprint-stalking in the customary hunched run of its kind. Evidently, it had detected the approach of bigger prey and sought to evade. Cheers sounded from the Scion's feet. The enemy warhound had turned from its kill and had been savaging the surviving unifiers with massed fire. Now the tide had turned. Weakling fire streamed up from the divided packs of enemy infantry, brave enough to show their faces. Tanks were scattered among the rabble. These vomited hard shells that hammered rippling tremors across her voids. She returned fire from her hull turrets, streaming las cannon beams and high-caliber bolt shells back in return. The weaklings fell silent. She strode down the avenue, crunching monuments of wraithbone beneath her heavy tread. Her cockpit head swung on heaving, pistoned hinges, expelling air and sucking it back in as she tracked left and right, left and right. I can't see it. I can't see. There. Her warhorn augmented a wrathful bellow. There in the mist, half hidden by the domes of buildings that barely reached the Scion's waist, the enemy engine was flanking around at a joint-rattling pace. Its predatory lean gave it a hungry cast. Its stabilizers must have been straining fit to rupture with the pace it set. Her gun limb rose on two slow joints. The Warhound was faster, clanking its way around the final building and spitting up a twinned torrent of macro bolter fire from its gun limbs. Die! It canted up at her in broken code. There was more in the confused mess of its decree. A mishmash of rage and zealotry and loyalty to the Warmaster. Little of it made sense beyond its evocation of hatred. She was turning to bring her own weapons to bear, turning into the blizzard of burning metal shells. Her voids rippled, shuddered, flickered, held. Die! The Warhound emitted again, half pleading now, weaving away and striding beneath the arc of her volcano cannon, and into her reaching fist. She was too slow, too tall, too wounded to catch the engine that sprint-hunched away, half her height. Her grasping metal fingers clawed great gouges across the beast's back, stealing its balance but failing to hold it in place. She heard its relieved spurt of exalted, shattered code as it lurched towards escape. Its three-toed feet crashed through a regiment of her Scutari. They discharged small arms fire at its retreating back. Amazingly, one of her hoplites even threw a spear that bounced from the Warhound's carapace. It stuck there, wedged between two armor plates. A heroic cast, her crew were saying. And yet useless, she thought, even as she admired the Scutari's valor. She knew the Warhound wouldn't return again. Even injured as she was, slowed by grievous wounds, she would see it dead if it showed itself once more. The Scion waited. Trickles of her worshippers began to make themselves known, riding conveyors or journeying on foot, making their way in safety now the demigod stood watch over them. And here she would remain. She panned on her waist axis, staring. Staring. Her motions were industrial thunder. The mist hid all. Then a signal. Another of her brothers calling to her. Black Sky, one of her noblest kindred. She had precious few siblings left. Black Sky, I come. My princeps, one of her crew asked, turning in his forward throne. Word from the Tribune. Ilmarius Novus was the only engine on station to guard the Unifier's evacuation in this district. Princeps Nisholm Alvarek opened her eyes for the first time in uncounted hours. Ra wishes us to remain. Aye, my princeps. Inform Ra that it is with regret we cannot fulfill his desires. Tell him that we have received word that the Black Sky suffers. If we are to die here, my moderati, then we will ensure the escape of as many of our brother and sister engines as possible. Black Sky calls, she said with finality. We walk to his aid. The Scion walked. One of the phantasms danced before her, one of the creatures that sent shivery unease through her crew and hurt their eyes to look upon, yet simply didn't exist on her instruments. Winged, feathered like some carrion crow warped into spindly humanoid form, it beat the air with great wings, vomiting blue fire upon the infantry below. She shredded it with turret fire, sending its charred skeleton to the ground. Walking on, she saw engines in the mist. Their hump-backed silhouettes spoke of size and class and weapon loadouts, as surely as any scan report. The fog was thinner in this part of the city. Black Sky stood alone, facing two of the foe. Smoke streamed from his hull, greying the pervasive golden mist. The Reaver retreated in halting strides, backing across a wide bridge over an expanse of golden nothingness. The other engines followed, moving between domes and towers. One warhound, one warlord. A hunting carder, like a primitive king and his faithful dog. She recognized the excited bleats of code from the lesser engine as the same garbled nonsense of the warhound that had fled from her before. Of course. Sending a lone scout titan ahead to draw prey in pursuit was a common enough tactic. The Scion took position at the bridge's end, raising her gun limbs on ponderous hydraulics. Aware of her now, the enemy engines remained on the far side of the span. She sensed their weapon lock slipping, thrown loose by the mist. She heard their spurts of aggravated code and knew the frustration well. Her long-range targeting systems had refused to focus since the first day she walked within this realm.
They must not be allowed to cross the bridge.
A warlord would wreak untold havoc among the evacuating Mechanicum. But wounded and drained, she knew her chances of survival were at best insignificant. Even with Black Sky aiding her, it would be two gravely wounded Ignatum engines against two fresh foes.
Retreat, she canted to the injured Black Sky. Fall back to the evacuation zone. Live. Survive to fight once more on the surface of Mars. I will deal with these apostates.
So be it. The Scion would make her last stand here.
The very heart of the great work. As fine a place as any, and far finer than most.
Missiles streamed past the withdrawing Reaver, leaving smoke trails in the mist. Launched in haste by unlocked targeting systems, they had precious little hope of impacting at such a range. None of them even brushed Black Sky's voids.
Sanctuary,
the Reaver canted as it reached the bridge end. Its code was laden with relief at survival, as well as shame at needing to withdraw. Contemptuously, it ground an abandoned rhino into the Wraithbone Avenue. Just another smear of wreckage amidst the devastation. Before their arrival, the alien necropolis had been bare of anything but smooth, gleaming bone. Now it was a graveyard for numberless vehicles and unburied corpses. They blanketed the roadways and bridges, a dark swathe between buildings of pale bone.
Sanctuary,
Scion confirmed. Black Sky veered slowly away, stalking towards safety. Across the span, the first of the enemy engines began its approach. The warlord was undamaged, its sloping and scaled armor typical of Forge World Omadan's engines. The open hand of the Forge's symbol showed scarification upon the palm, runic scarring in patterns that resembled no known language for the Scion to process. The warhound loped past and ahead of its slower brother, its hunchback swaying, gun limbs rising. It crossed the bridge far faster, and the Scion noted the riven markings of its own power fist gouged along the second engine's back.
You die first.
She was destined to be left here, but she would choose her own death. With hydraulic majesty, the Scion of Vigilant Light rose to her final challenge. Warhorn blaring. The Archimandrite lifted its fist. The rebel legionary, thrashing in its one-handed clutch, barely even strained the hydraulics of the war machine's grip. Two bolt shells hammered against the dura-bonded thickness of its facial armor, causing its visuals to gray out for a fraction of a second. With no more ammunition, the Space Marine hurled the pistol with an impact that would have broken a human's spine. It spanked off the side of the Archimandrite's faceplate, as harmful as a kindly caress. The machine applied pressure, closing its fist by degrees. Purple armor warped, then cracked, then the meat beneath began to bleed through the ravaged ceramite. Bones cracked, then crumbled. Only then did the warrior cry out, as his torso and thighs were reduced to shards of bone and mangled flesh, barely held together by a layer of metal. The ruination no longer resembled a man at all.
You bore me,
the Archimandrite told the Space Marine. After dropping the crippled mess to the ground, it silenced the warrior for good with a press of its clawed foot.
To untuned and untrained senses, the evacuation looked much the same as the rest of the siege. The grinding of opposing forces across the city had changed little on the surface. Only in the catacombs was the evidence of flight more profound, as the Mechanicum's adepts, who formed the first wave, filtered into the hazy tunnels. War servitors went with them, a carefully cogitated number, a subtle exodus alongside the true evacuation, dispersed almost to the point of being hidden. The Archimandrite oversaw this second dispersal with the same precision it had arranged the first. A heavy chainsword slammed against the machine's knee joint, the kind of brute weapon that found easy homes in the more savage legions, capable of rending an armored man in two. Sparks arced from where the racing, revving teeth met Martian metal. The Archimandrite didn't even have time to kill its attacker. The red-plated World Eater collapsed, headless, beneath a sweep of a custodian spear. The machine, Executor Principus of the Martian Mechanicum's forces here, approached its role with calculating fervor. In its flesh life, it had wrought weapons, infusing them with spirit and purpose before sending them away to wage holy war. Now it was a weapon in its own right. With each kill, Magos Domina Hieronyma of the Ordo Reductor died a little more inside her own mind. She went willingly, subsumed by the cogitations and mathematical processes of annihilating her foes. The Archimandrite was in ascendance, no longer a high priestess of the Unmaker God, but an avatar of it. The Archimandrite was only doing as it was made to do. It had joined the great work and inlinked to the entirety of the Mechanicum's army. Now it saw through their eyes, accessed their thought patterns, and led them into battle.
Home.
It canted the word into the new sphere, that meta-digital network of data streams accessible only to those born of the Red Planet, and subsequently fitted with high-grade augmetics. Its transmissive was laden with codes and equations and coordinates of birth foundries and manufactories, of plateaus where great battles were fought between forges.
Home.
It broadcast to those capable of hearing it, instilling the concept itself within the minds of the more aware Mechanicum leaders. Many of them canted back replies of their own. Home. And for Fabricator General Kane, most commonly. While still more chorused their words out loud, augmenting them as battle cries into the faces of their foes. The Archimandrite paid special heed to the custodians. It was increasingly evident that the Legio Custodes was no unified army. Its warriors fought without formation or legion-scale order, even at the squad level. Each one was an individual among other individuals, trailed by his own artificers and arsenal thralls, the latter of whom reloaded the custodian's guardian spears each time a warrior called out. Their ranks seemed informal, like gestures of respect towards veterans and gifted individuals, rather than a command structure to be rigidly adhered to. Few of them, even Tribune Endymion, or those who shared Diocletian Chorus's rank of prefect, ever gave orders. They simply immersed themselves wherever the fighting was thickest, slaughtering in silence. And yet, there was unity. Unity of purpose, if nothing else. Despite the lack of order and the length of their spinning blades, they never burdened one another or blighted the paths of the other warriors around them. Consummate reflexes, far in advance of a legionary's own gen-hanced grace, gave them a talent that required years for human soldiers, even space marines, to learn through repetitive discipline. Yet the 10,000 were masters of it. The Archimandrite watched them whirling and killing, their energized blades passing within a hand's breadth of another golden warrior, yet never once threatening the other custodian's life. Each one of them existed within his own sphere, a warlord unto himself. Nor was that all. The Archimandrite's observation revealed an inherent defensiveness in the initial blows of each duel. At first, this seeming passivity during the first seconds of engagement made little sense. But further analysis showed the truth.
Each custodian spent those precious moments studying his foe, adjusting his fighting style to compensate, then delivering a killing blow. They could simply overpower their enemies immediately with superior strength, speed, and armament. Instead, they learned from each and every fight. Ra Endymion exemplified this. He would parry twice or thrice, whether it was sword, axe, fang, or claw, following his enemy's movements with brief flickers of attention, then lashing back to impale, to cleave, to sever. According to the Archimandrite's data streams, no legionary had yet lasted more than 3 blows against his advance.
Bodyguards, the Archimandrite mused. Praetorians.
This was their purpose, after all. Not to win wars, but to know their master's enemies and destroy them before they could do him harm. How many thousands of hours of picked footage did the 10,000 study from each conquered or compliant world? Their lives surely consisted of an eternity of preparatory devotion, studying enemy after enemy, in case they ever faced them in battle, atop the physicality of their standard training. Their preternatural reactions allowed them to block bolts and lasfire alike, deflecting it from their spinning spears. But they could still be killed. The Archimandrite had witnessed that itself. They could be overwhelmed by foes and dragged down, or gunned down while already engaged. The machine advanced at Ra's side, its shoulder cannons tracking independently of its primary attention, groaning with the ear-straining of Martian Volkite beams and the heaviest staccato crashing of Avenger bolt cannons. Ammunition feeds and power indicators decorated the edges of the Archimandrite's vision. They flashed with sacred depletion, a prayer to the Unmaker God itself. The armored energy reactor bound to her back seethed with continually replenishing plasma. The heart of an artificial sun powered her weapons and intellect alike. War had never felt so holy. A particularly brave legionary launched himself at the Archimandrite from the back of a careening rhino. The machine plucked the screaming sword-bearer out of the air, holding him as the flamer jets in its wrist incinerated the captive fool. All the while, the Archimandrite fired with its free hand, the double-barreled energy weapon mounted there, one of Arkan Lan's more precious gifts, streaming with the fires of artificial fusion.
For sacred Mars, it canted, projecting its exhalation through the new sphere.
Home.
They fought along the rising promenades, between the impossible towers. Silhouettes of extinguished demons showed against the Eldar architecture, their images burned onto the wraithbone by the Archimandrite's weapons. They came from the sky as often as they surged from the ground, creatures falling from the cityscape above onto the advancing Imperials. Diseased things climbed the towers to leap and fall, bursting as biological bombs with smacks of ruptured skin. Feathered wreckages of avian mimicry descended on fly-blown wings to be lanced through by grav raider lascannons and the massed fire of guardian spears. Around the Archimandrite, the wraithbone spires thrummed with an almost metallic resonance each time their smooth walls were struck by errant fire. The machine calculated as it killed, neospherically assigning more battle servitors and Skitarii to begin the journey into the tunnels beneath the city. The numbers of withdrawing Mechanicum warriors rose subtly, quietly higher than the projected figures the Archimandrite had offered to the 10,000. There were no inloaded questions to mark this discrepancy, no outrage or curiosity at the alterations in the figures. The custodians and the Sisters of Silence battled on oblivious.
For the Omnissiah, it augmented aloud.
For the Unmaker God.
Home,
the Archimandrite canted.
For Sacred Mars. For Fabricator General Kane.
The Scion stood alone. She swayed on legs blighted by ruptured stabilizers. She leaned askew, the pistons and pressure junctions of her left leg shattered beyond repair. Oil blood sluiced from severed pipe veins, gushing fluid and life and coolant onto the bone bridge beneath her. Torsion bundle cabling hung from her iron guts, a spillage of intestines. The bridge was hers. Inside herself, she felt fire and death. The former licking at her internal systems and weakening her bones, the latter resonating in the lost and mournful dirges of dispersing mortal consciousnesses. Her crew were dead or dying, their souls fleeing damaged husks, fading away into whatever nothingness awaited their frail and fleshly kind. But the bridge was hers.
Scion of Vigilant Light,
she furiously canted across the falling city.
Scion of Vigilant Light!
The outcry was laden with desperate code. Let one of her brothers and sisters hear her. Let them absorb that coded cry into their data streams and carry it with them when they fled this place. Imprinted within the code was the picked feed footage, weapon reports, and crew-linked experiences of her last battle and greatest triumph. The bridge was hers, and her final wish was that her kindred would remember her like this, as a victor, not as a martyred sacrifice. Duels between engines rarely lasted long. She had walked towards this last battle amidst a breaker of vox noise. The Warhound closed fast. Both of its gun limbs were given over to anti-infantry mountings. They screeched up with the explosive rage of several hundred bolt shells per second, lighting the Scion shields in prismatic shimmers, rippling them like a lake in a hailstorm. It scampered ferrily aside from her own opening salvo, compacting itself at full sprint to run beneath the Warlord's right gun limb. This was the way of the Warhounds in battle, to scout and ambush, to harass and to distract. Indecision tore at her. Behind her, the Warhound might work its evil unmolested, streaming fire upon her rear voids with impunity. Worse, it might even chase the fleeing Black Sky, rendering the Scion's sacrifice worthless. She let it go, trusting in the simple hatred of its princeps. The Scion had wounded this engine. She wagered with her life that the Warhound's commander would hunger for the satisfaction of vengeance, not chase the tactical prize of harrying the wounded Black Sky. The first missile shattered and burst against the layered aegis of her void shields. Their impacts did no harm beyond stripping the first shield skins away, but the occlusion of dirty black smoke across her cockpit windows was an irritant. She blind-fired in reply, an expression of disgust more than anything else, yet felt an immediate stab of gratification when the modest rocket salvo from her right shoulder set off the discordant jangle of abused voids. In the same second, alarms and flashing runes within her crew's helms declared the punishment her rear voids were taking. The first Warhound had looked around for an attack after all. She had been right to trust in its stupid hatred.
"Daughter of the Red Star,"
the Warhound brayed up at her. Her abused voids screeched under its ceaseless clawing. The Scion twisted in a half turn. She began to lower herself, forcing her protesting hydraulics down by venting pressure from her pistons and setting her joints into neutral passive. An ungainly hunch at best. At worst, a shameful bowing of her head before death. As expected, the Warhound darted away from her firing arc just as before, even as the Scion's gun limb tracked around at maximum extension. This time she held nothing back. With every safeguard unlocked and shut down, her shoulders erupted with trailing smoke as her missile pods roared themselves empty. As she purged herself of her munitions, her volcano cannon breathed its magma blast. This combined, flaring payload aimed entirely at the ground around her. To the credit of the Warhound's crew, the lithe engine veered away from the discharging volcano blast, avoiding the certain death of its fusion heat. To the credit of the Scion's crew, however, the unleashing of its primary weapon had merely been a way to shepherd the Warhound to where it wished it to go. Dodging the inferno sent the daughter of the Red Star striding directly into the rain of falling missiles. The first impacts arrested its evading stride, forcing it to brace back on its own hydraulics to prevent itself toppling over. It was already dead. Dead the moment it weaved away from the volcano cannon. The warhound's voids rippled, blistered, sundered, burst in the span of a human heartbeat. The missiles were dozens of falling blades, each one knifing into the daughter's carapace and gouging away great chunks of blackened ablative metal. One rocket shattered its knee joint, another hammered into its sloping canine forehead and ripped away half of its cockpit head, leaving its crew's burning corpses dangling from its halved skull, still connected to their thrones by their hard-plug cables, hanging like executed criminals.
"Foe death,"
the Scion canted, coding her tone with silken malice. She received an answer, snarling, patient hate from the warlord ahead. She was rising again, forcing pressure back into depleted hydraulics. Restoring pressure to vented metal bones took time, and she had precious little of it. A barrage from the enemy warlord struck her front shields with punitive whip cracks. Alarm chimes became wailing sirens as her voids thinned and buckled. She silenced her internal warnings with a thought. She knew how much pain she was in and the danger surrounding her. She didn't need automated systems caterwauling to drive the point home. She was at half extension when her voids went dark. She braced, leaning into the punishment striking her forward arc, shaking even before the sonic boom of her voids finally giving out. Hard lasfire raked and gouged her armor plating, cutting into her, rending her apart while she still stood. Mercifully, the battering ceased almost at once. The approaching warlord had expended itself in shattering the Scion shields. Both engines strained to reload, fresh rockets racking into place, plasma generators roiling as they recharged. She was deeply wounded now, sparks lighting up the inside of her cockpit skull through the windows of her eyes. Fire suppressants sprayed through her insides in soothing rushes. Half of her missile racks had jammed, their mechanisms fouled by damage. Closer the enemy warlord came, an executioner's confidence in the shieldless tilt of its wounded prey, needing to be within a kilometre to trust the accuracy of its webway misted firing solutions. Spraying blind fire and estimating trajectories was no longer enough. The time had come for the killing blow. The Scion started walking, bleeding fluid and streaming smoke. The way she still rose on her resetting hydraulics gave her a distinct shoulder-charging hunch. The enemy warlord ceased locomotion at an approximate kilometer, unwilling to draw closer. No doubt its crew was trying to ordain a hasty coolant dump weapon recharge. She started running. A stabilizer-wrenching, metal-stressing lean as her ugly, stomping stride gained speed. She dumb-fired, systemless and trusting her gunner's eyes, volleying every missile that had managed to reload and lancing a beam from her volcano cannon. Her assault hammered into her foe's void shields in the precious seconds before the enemy warlord fired. The Scion felt the brief, electric sweetness of vindication as her foe's voids stuttered and snap-died with the telltale thundercrack of overloading generators. Failed shields could be swiftly relit, but overloaded systems required a more lengthy restart. The two engines were as defenseless as each other. A moment later, the return barrage took the Scion high in the torso, exploding along her shoulder, detonating the cache of unloaded rockets in a cacophonic fireburst. Stabilizers braced and held. Others braced and tore free of their housing. She was barely a skeleton now, blackened and stripped of a third of her hull bulk. Where two immense missile arrays had stood proud of her shoulders, there now burned a halo of flame. She left her gun limb on the bridge where it had fallen, blown free of her carapace by the detonations ripping through her.
Lexorak,
the warlord canted its name in confident fury. Even so, it began to back away. The Scion's stride-eating charge was bringing both engines dangerously close, and Lexorak needed range to use its primary armaments. The Scion's overburdened ankle shattered, spraying iron and fire across the bridge. She stumbled, grinding down on the stump of a clawed foot, and strode forwards another step. Lexarac recognized that its backwards retreat was too slow and risked heading into a turn. Too late now, as well as too slow. Incidental, instinctive fire spat from its defensive turrets. Too little, too late. The Scion crashed forwards on its final step, her power fists slamming against the opposing armored metal and clenching closed. Lexarac fired its volcano cannon at terminal range, careless of the consequences in its need for panicked retaliation. For several seconds, the Scion stood motionless, disemboweled by the last shot, lightning snaking its way through her innards, beating out from her critical core. Fortune was with her for a few moments more. Between the Hexarchon's momentum and her own weight, she pulled her fist back on squealing hydraulics, wrenching her prize free of the enemy Titan's body. The most glorious Titan kills, and accordingly rare, involved the close combat taking of an enemy's head, severing it or dragging it from an engine's still living form. The cockpit heads of Eldar Titans made for the finest trophies in a forge's halls. Lexarac had turned aside, preventing such a triumph. Instead, the Scion's armored hand had plunged through the damaged plating of its upper rib armor, just beneath the armpit of its left gun limb. When she drew her hand back, in her scorched fingers was the hourglass-shaped, cable-strewn heart of the plasma reactor, leaking with fire-flash containment breaches. She held to it, fingers locked. She couldn't drop it. Her digital gearings had melted and seized.
Fall, apostate!
Her canting to Lexarac was weak, her war horns even weaker.
Reap the rewards of treason and heresy!
Lexarac began to topple, unpowered, unbalanced. It fell forwards in a painfully protracted pitch, first shattering the lip of the Wraithbone Bridge beneath the weight of its legs, then falling, sluggishly, end over end, into the abyss. The Scion watched it, eaten by the golden mist.
"Foe death," she canted.
As if her words were a signal, the reactor in her fist went critical. The resulting detonation peeling away the armor on her left side and tearing away her remaining arm at the elbow. She stood stunned and ruined on the precipice of the chasm, weaponless and unarmed, crowned by fire with sparks raining from her joints. The bridge was hers. Wounded unto death, the warlord Titan stood alone now, leaking life and streaming with the smoke of internal injuries.
"Scion of vigilant light,"
she canted in unison with her failing war horn.
"Hear me,"
she prayed.
"Hear me. Hear the last words of Princeps Nishom Alvarek and the regal Scion. Hear us both. Let us not die unremembered."
She canted the code-laced cry again, again, again. All the details of her last, best victory. She prayed for them to reach the data halls of proud Ignatum.
"I hear you."
"Who?"
The gutted Titan began to turn on ponderous, failing mechanisms. The industrial pistons and pneumatics of her waist axis were locked, the failsafe seals the only thing keeping her upright in a ballet of fragile harmony. If they unlocked now and left her at the mercy of her broken stabilizers, she would overbalance and fall. Slowly, so slowly, Black Sky hove into view. The Reaver Titan had returned. It stood ankle deep in the wreckage of Legion vehicles and slaughtered war servitors, watching the Scion with the dark panes of its cockpit eyes. Her reactor core churned, her heart lifted.
"Brother!"
Even her canting was slowed and slurring. Her princeps was on the edge of unconsciousness.
"I hear you."
The Reaver's returning cants were hollow and dispassionate. Even through her dying agonies, the Scion felt a Battle Queen's righteous anger at her Forgekin's lack of awed respect.
I have slain two engines with my last act. My death ensures your continued life. By what right do you stand in near silence?
Another thought pressed through the melting sludge of her thoughts.
Eject. Eject. Eject.
She could live. Her princeps could yet live if she could just reach the black sky. But the ejection manifolds were fouled, along with everything else inside her.
Come,
she canted to Black Sky.
Enkir, aid me.
The Reaver began to stride closer. His moderati were dead. Both of them slouched in their thrones in front of him, their slack features staring lifelessly through Black Sky's eyes, both of their uniforms blossoming in red flowers where the blood of their murders had dried hours ago. The female crew member had reclined into her throne almost innocently, seemingly asleep. The male, who had seen his companion's death and struggled to react, had bled significantly more after being shot through the back of the neck. He'd died halfway out of his throne, and now slumped against one side of the seat, his head still bouncing unnaturally with every step the Reaver took. The demon that had hollowed out Princeps Enkir Morova, and now nestled within the meat of his mortal form, was beginning to resemble the proud Ignatum veteran less and less. His eyes were raw and red, having not blinked in several hours. Bony protrusions bubbled beneath his flesh in living, crawling lumps, seemingly searching for places to break through the skin. His lap was full of his own teeth, which had pushed themselves from their sockets in a slow squeal, reminiscent of nails scratching porcelain. In the hours since it had claimed Black Sky as its weaponized sanctum, the Reaver had sustained no small damage from enemy infantry and other engines. The demon lacked the precision and training of the Titan's true crew. Now, coming to the end of its skin-claiming ride, the demon struggled to contain Enkir's mortal knowledge. And though it could feel the creeping temptation to dive deeper into the Titan itself and wrap its essence around the machine's sentient core, even power such as this would feel limiting to the ancient creature after a time. It had no desire to cage itself, even in such a mighty form. Its lure had worked to perfection, drawing the Scion to its aid, then feigning flight. Now all that remained was the moment of cold-blooded vindication, one that even the flensed spiritual remnants of Enkir would enjoy, for the Princeps himself was a man of war and no stranger to murder. Countless men and women had fallen beneath his gun limbs, each one capable of levelling hive spires. The demon felt him now, the shredded tatters of the man's soul screaming in the back of its thoughts as the Reaver Titan drew close to its taller, expiring sister. The demon felt Princeps Nishom Alvarek's dying thoughts, translated into emotion through the code-laced transmissions, the exhausted pride in her meaningless triumph, the more honest desperation she couldn't quite swallow of all mortal beings unwilling to accept their own death. And yet she ached for one thing more than even her own survival, to be remembered for these deeds, to be spoken of by those that knew her name. That was all. What fortune that Black Sky had returned. How much truer and purer this hunt was. How much more satisfying than simply breaking machine men apart with its claws or dueling the hateful Golden. The demon's answer came in a rise of gun limbs. The shattered Scion was too wounded and joint-locked to even turn aside. Rooting through Enkir's hind thoughts kept dredging a single word to the surface. The demon canted it unthinkingly in the moment before both weapons fired.
Foe death.
The Scion of Vigilant Light stood motionless as she was speared through the chest with an inferno blast, killed through shameful execution. The Titan followed the falling form of its last kill, its ravaged silhouette plunging into the mist. The demon, watching, savoured every moment of Nisholm's screams. Its entertainment ended abruptly, when, rather than vanish into the gold of oblivion, the Scion's detonating reactor core went nova, sending flashes of thunderstorm light flickering through the mist beneath the bridge. The last of the Scion's living crew died, consumed in sacred plasma fire. Black Sky turned in a ponderous arc and strode off in search of other prey.